Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are. What is the date anyway? It's halfway through the month already, almost.
Well, it's actually about 32%.
Well, no, the 12th, 2 days left. No, 3 days left. Well, maybe. I would say it's more 50% minus 10%.
Ah.
So 40% would be the number I'd come up with.
I gotcha. Well, I invited you, but you missed it. We had a big party in the Tiki this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We had a
I couldn't fly down there.
Yeah, we had a big crawfish boil and barbecue.
So I found some new hot sauce, a new brand of hot sauce that we're kind of selling it out at the grocery outlet place.
What is that?
It's called Panola.
What kind of peppers?
They have a lot of varieties of hot sauces, including a clear one. But the one that I discovered that I thought was really good was their Tabasco pepper hot sauce.
Hmm. Was it?
And it is. It's just, it was just it's absolutely fantastic.
Really? Was it, what kind of, I mean, heat? Was it
not? It's hot.
It's hot.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you going to stock up on it?
Yeah, I went back and bought a bunch of different ones. They have some other ones, some Cajun, habanero, and some other. They're all pretty decent. But this particular one is really good.
Yeah, nice.
It's their standard.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, the crawfish were hot. My boy from Louisiana comes in. We shipped in actually 80 pounds of crawfish live on Southwest Air. Picked them up the cargo bay. We had some ribs. I smoked ribs.
Can't for you just go out to the bay and get some?
No, not here. They're only in Louisiana.
Oh.
We had pulled chicken sandwiches. I had ribs. I smoked for 5 hours. Quite the get up. Some live music. Yep, lots of fun. Next time. You'll be here next time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me give you some things that are going on in the markets. Markets managed to pull off a gain in a kind of a up and down week last week, but it ended up being a gain ahead of this the G7 talks that happened this week, which we'll talk about in a moment. The North Korea talks, which are going on, you know, and kind of just ended just a little while ago. Tech was a bit weaker after it hit an all-time high. There's some concerns that Apple is slowing down orders. Suppliers by about 20% or so, but that could be just ahead of the next release. And it looks like the North Korea summit went well, so that was fine. No details on what it is. It was just great, 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 great. Did you see any of the press on that? It was just great, wasn't it?
Yeah, I saw much of it.
Great. It's all great. Great guy, great thing, great opportunity.
It was
great. Yeah. It was just great. So we don't know anything about
what's
going
on. I have to say it's something no other president managed to accomplish.
Yep, that is obviously the truth. We'll see. I mean, hopefully they'll pull through and, you know, this whole, the definition of denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Does that mean that South Korea has to also get rid of whatever they may have?
That would be us.
Yeah. Well, you think that's going to happen?
Yeah, it's going to all happen. It's just not going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know.
This Kim Jong-un's, he's a cosmopolitan guy. You know, he was raised in Bern, Switzerland, spent his later years in Paris, France. And then when his dad died, they whisked him over to North Korea to take over the place. And, you know, as far as he's concerned, I'm sure he's been to better places.
Did you see the interview with Dennis Rodman?
only the part where he's crying.
Oh, I watched it. I was watching it. And I was shocked. So those of you that haven't seen it, Dennis Rodman, like CNN or some various programs brought him on to, you know, what is Dennis Rodman's position? How is he helping out the whole Korean discussions? And he gets on, he starts talking. He's got a nose ring in each nose. He's got a lip ring. He's got things going on. He's got this potcoin.com t-shirt of Making America Great Again hat. And he's talking and they're asking questions. And then he says, you know, so how did this go with you? And he says, well, you know, it took a lot. I knew it was going to happen. And when I said that, I got all these death threats and people were hating me. And he started just bawling.
Yeah.
It was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he's a weird guy. But he's buddies with this Kim Jong-il. Un. And he goes, I'm sure, a couple times a year, play some, shoot some hoops. And
oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I see it.
Do whatever.
I see it. Well, this week, just to get back on track for a second about what's going on here in the U.S., we have a big week for economic information. So today we saw the consumer price index come out, the inflation index. It was up 0.2%, which was as expected. However, it hit a 6-year high. So inflation is continuing to roll up pretty well here.
Sounds like it.
Wednesday, we have the producer price index. Expectations are for a plus 0.2% again. And on Wednesday, we also have the Fed. We'll talk about that in a second. Thursday, import and export prices, retail sales, business inventories. Friday, industrial production, capacity utilization, and the University of Michigan Consumer Confidence Index for June. So it's a big week for economics. I don't know if that's going to change any of the current attitude towards stocks, which everybody seems to just be back in love with.
Yeah.
Everything's good. Not worrying about trade. Not worrying about the G7. And we're going to see potentially you watch TV and, oh, what do you think about what the Fed's going to do Wednesday? Oh, it's baked in. Everybody, it's baked in.
It's baked in.
It's baked in. The hike is going to happen. The question is, are we going to have two or one more for the rest of the year? They're going to do September. I watched somebody on Bloomberg talk about how, listen, here's the deal. It's baked in for this. We know that's happening. It's a done deal. Okay. Then there's possibly one in September, one in December. Now, September is in between now and December. This is what they're talking about. This is the people that get on TV to tell you about what's possibly happening in the financial markets, explaining how September is in between now and December.
I'm glad they straightened that out. Yeah. It was controversial.
he goes through this, he wraps himself in a corner and ends up saying absolutely nothing. Just that the highlight of his discussion and the realization that we possibly have another few months before December is coming along. So, but there is an expectation for a 25 basis point raise. And this is having this recent rise in interest rates and, more importantly, the slowdown of buying the bonds, you know, through the quantitative easing program is having real and serious ramifications for emerging markets. And we've seen many emerging.
Explain that. Well, why?
Well, because the dollar was going higher, and that's really problematic for them. Oil's been going higher, and we're seeing inflation, and that's another discussion entirely. But oil and natural resources prices going higher. But the tightening of financial conditions by the Fed, by number one, increasing rates, but also taking money out of the system through the by them not pushing in and buying bonds, is creating a very tight monetary situation. But for here, but it's really messing around with their currencies and their ability to buy things and their markets and their and the economies. It really is putting a damper because liquidity has been sapped out of the markets. So while here it's okay because we are doing it to slow down our economy, you know, kind of whatever happens in the U.S. and in particular the emerging markets that are close to us, like Latin America, is, yeah, you know, it's very much interrelated.
All right.
So now these EM countries and are begging the Fed to stop with the normalization of rates.
What do they want them to do? Jack it up?
No, they want to go back to the days when it was just, you know, free money flowing everywhere.
Oh, okay.
Just leaking over there, and they're able to utilize, you know, a lower dollar was good because their dollar was worth more. No, they can't. But everybody thought they was going to do it forever. It seemed like 8-9 years has been close to forever.
It seems like almost forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it started, what, in 2008? Or 7?
It started in 2000, I believe, 8.
Yeah, okay, it's 10 years.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So now this word contagion is starting to creep in the vocabulary and in news stories and headlines. And you're seeing the word come up in conversation quite regularly now with economists. That that we're going to see, you know, a contagion factor.
Contagion.
As we see, well, the contagion is baked in, they're saying, I guess.
Baked in.
So what's happening is with places like Brazil, which is in a recession, and what we saw with Venezuela and a bit of Argentina, and you know, some of the not so much in Asia, because Asia, the emerging markets in Asia are really tied to, let's say, China and Japan. Whereas Latin America and some areas possibly, you know, throughout that region and south are much more aligned with our, what we're doing. And so far, there has been no sign that Japan is going to slow down on their quantitative easing program and trying their best to drop the yen. And in the Euro region, there's no sign really that they're going to do anything very substantial to start taking money out of the system. So we're not seeing a lot of problems there. But, you know, we're really seeing a lot of wreckage. I mean, you look at, you know, Brazil, they have their own problems, but their markets are down, what, 10% for the year?
Yeah.
Something like that. So contagion is starting to spread, I guess. Yeah. So, oh, well. Now, there was a U-turn on this whole, did you follow all this G7 hoo-ha?
Yeah, I followed it very closely. I actually watched all the press conferences.
What do you think about what happened there with, you know, Canada? With the G7?
Well, you know, this guy, this Trudeau kid, and he looks like a kid and he sounds like one. He's like a kid. He first of all, Trump gave a press conference and yacked about how everything is great. And of course, they said, you know, you listen to the reports on it. Unless you saw the press conference, you have no idea. He wasn't acting like he was. We had some clips on the No Agenda show from MSNBC where, oh, he looks sick. He looks ill. He's unhinged. I mean, it was just a standard Trump press conference. Sounded like everything was going to go well. And then Trudeau comes, and Trump is really irked about this. I forget the numbers, 270% tax on dairy products from the United States. And now they're adding a tax on this ultra filtered milk product that everyone's all gaga over. And so Trump goes, you know, bitches about the tariff, and then he says, we're going to put a tariff on steel and aluminum if they don't do something about their tariffs, which nobody reported on in the media. They didn't want to mention the fact that this was a quid pro quo. It was just like, apparently everyone thought that Trump was just doing it unilaterally because he was mean. So then Trudeau comes out and he does his press conference. He immediately goes into a rampage about the aluminum and the steel, and never mentioning the milk dairy tariffs. And then he says, Canada's not going to be pushed around and we're not going to do this. We're not stooges for the United States. He just goes crazy. He's the one who was unhinged. And Trump gets wind of this while he's flying to Korea or Singapore. And he writes a tweet. He says, okay, I'm not agreeing to this letter, this agreement that everyone signed off on.
The communique. The communique.
Yeah, the communique. So he says, that's that. He says, he was short of saying he's a loser, which I'm sure he wanted to say, but he said he was meek. And then the whole, so what? Okay, that's where we left it. That's where we left it.
Yeah, he called him very dishonest and weak.
Yeah.
And then Germany and France were out criticizing Trump for not supporting and pulling out of his support for the Group of Seven communique, which is
they made pretty clear. Actually, Trudeau gave a lot of it away that we weren't in agreement with a lot of the things that were going in there anyway, including giving a bunch of money to third world countries for education of women, because we need to put some money into our own country because we have a lousy education system, California being one of the worst. And there was also a whole bunch of climate change money that was going to be sent off to little countries. And there was, you know, this was just it was a money grab. It had nothing to do with trade.
Always is.
And so Trump was annoyed by the whole thing.
Right. Then the White House advisors came out. So first, Larry Kudlow, who is now recovering from a heart attack.
Yeah, he has a heart attack. This job must be rough.
Yeah. He says, Trudeau really kind of stabbed us in the back. He said on the CNN State of the Union. And the advisor knew. Yeah, I guess that was the case when it came out from your story.
Yeah, well, I don't think it was that Trudeau's actually overtly stabbing anyone in the back. I think he was just so – he's a kid. He's like a naive kid, and he felt he has a base to appeal to of liberals and progressives. And so I think he was just – he was pulling a Trump. He was just talking off the top of his head, and it was very offensive to Trump. So that was that.
Well, then we saw Navarro come out on Fox News Sunday, and he says – there's a special place in hell for any leader that engages in bad faith diplomacy with President Donald J. Trump and then tries to stab him in the back on the way out the door. And that's what bad faith Justin Trudeau did with this stunt press conference. That's what weak, dishonest Justin Trudeau did. So here's my question about this. Is this a thing, using some kind of a modifier in front of the name? Where you know, Donald Trump does, you know, like crying.
Well, Donald's best example was Crooked Hillary.
Yeah, Crooked Hillary or crying whoever it was, or lying Ted Cruz or.
Yeah, all those guys. Yeah.
All these, you know, put some kind of a modifier in front of their name, which is so fifth grade, by the way.
It might be fifth grade, but it's Scott Adams, the hypnotist and cartoonist, went about discussing this trick, which is what he called it. Because you tend to remember the name, and then you start doing association, and so you all of a sudden start thinking Hillary's crooked, and so it's not as much of a fifth grade. It sounds fifth or juvenile,
right?
But it may be done on purpose.
I'm sure it is done on purpose, but at the same time, it just seems so not. I don't want to see I don't want to say presidential because that's not the point. It just doesn't seem very adult-like. It doesn't seem nice.
How's it's this? Silly at one level, but seems to be effective. It got the job after all.
Of course. So, and I'm surprised nobody's come up with a name, backlashing with a name for Trump.
Well, the problem with the anti-Trump forces is they can't. We have a big list that we actually have to put it online pretty soon. That we've developed of all the things they want to call Trump, but there's too many of them. They can't. They're so. It's almost like this. It's like there's too many. No one can choose one and stick with it. The one that I thought was always the best was thin-skinned, and that comes and goes. I mean, that's what Elizabeth Warren was calling thin-skinned Donald Trump, which is a similar kind of a fifth grade thing, but. Nobody would agree on it because I think it's better if we use this. I mean, they were all in disagreement. And so, and there's so many of these things they like to call them. So it's not working out.
Why are we getting some static? Some kind of like, sounds like, I don't know, like a bad radio signal from your side.
I don't know. Nothing I'm doing different.
Let's just blame Skype again. Microsoft's cut the thread. Let's see here. And speaking of trade, continuing on with this, was getting some things heating up with President Xi Jinping from China, whose country is, we're involved right now in this high stakes trade dispute with the United States. I love how these writers are writing things, the high stakes trade dispute with the United States. He said he rejects selfish, short-sighted trade policies and called for building an open global economy, although he stopped short of mentioning any country in particular. So, of course, the news media is going to come on with, what they really are saying here is the United States should stop with this. But, it's not only the United States. We're seeing a lot of countries that have had protectionist policies in place for many years. We know that. We know that also trade is not balanced very well for a lot of different reasons. But, it's kind of interesting how this is all being, the way these, not lately, but we're seeing a lot more of this kind of commentary and then the need to look at it and dig into it. It's not, what happened to when the news was just the news? You know, they just
When was that?
That was back in 1924.
Even then, it wasn't the news. It was the yellow journalism.
Yeah, it's just it's irritating. It's I don't want to have to think so much. Tell me the facts. What's going on? If there are
nobody can do it.
Nobody can do it. It's not. Yeah. But hasn't it gotten worse and worse and worse?
I don't think so.
You think it's always been just as bad, but maybe we're all waking up to it?
Well, I think the internet's waking us up to it.
That could be. Because now you have everybody giving us the alternative meaning of what people are actually saying.
There's more voices, and some of them are more make more logical sense. I think that could be part of it. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, in the internet and on the area of digital stuff, cryptocurrency is getting just obliterated once again. It seems that in South Korea, there's an exchange called CoinRail. Somehow that doesn't, it sounds fishy to begin with. CoinRail. Like he's been railroaded. I don't know. They said there was a cyber intrusion in its system. Again, once again, not being fully disclosed, saying it was a hack and money was stolen or whatever exactly went on there. But there was a cyber intrusion in its system. It's kind of the theme of the show. It's the meaning behind the meeting tonight.
Yeah, maybe.
And still dropping. We have a little chart there where it was a little while ago. Bitcoin dropped like $1,000 in the last couple of days since Sunday when this information was out. Ethereum is at 489. Litecoin's at 99, sub 100. I think that was at 300 at one point. Not too long ago. And you still got these guys on TV constantly. You know, CNBC has turned into part of the programs, particularly in the evenings, has turned into like they have a cyber, a cryptocurrency block where a couple of the guys that, quote, specialize in this, which is funny to begin with.
It's ludicrous. It's ludicrous.
I specialize in, we've been doing this for 6 months and I specialize in this area that no one can really explain. And they keep talking, and invariably there's two or three guys they bring on and they talk about why now is the time to buy.
Yeah.
All the time.
All the time.
Well, now
when they started up, is now is the time to buy. Now, yesterday, is now is the time to buy. Apparently, it's always the time to buy.
Always the time to buy. It's going to hit this price. It's going to hit that price. And right now, it's, you know, they start out the show. Have you watched Fast Money? Melissa Lee gets on there and cryptocurrency, you know, they do this as a tease. Cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin is doing something it's never done before. And we're bringing on an expert to tell you what's next.
Well, I have a new theory about how to invest in cryptocurrency.
Yeah, don't.
I would say always invest around book value.
The book value of the currency itself.
Yeah.
So, which is zero.
Yeah.
So put zero money into it.
Yeah.
Or if it gets down to zero, maybe buy it.
Well, that'd be book value.
Yeah.
I'm a book value investor.
Yeah, you're a value investor when it comes. That's what you are. You're a cryptocurrency value investor.
Exactly.
You're looking at the fundamental valuation.
The fundamentals. I want to see what the book value is, and I'll go maybe somewhere around book value.
Yeah. Well, that didn't happen. So you're not investing in is the point. I mean, the thing is that
I would have invested if I had known what I was. You know, if I listened to some of my friends who said invest when it was 50 cents.
You know, it's funny because, you know, certain things like you talk about Apple, for example, or Tesla. Or, you know, back in the, you know, days before there was, you know, Tyco and a few other names people get like really emotional about. And I got a tweet I saw recently I saw something recently where somebody said, oh, they stopped following me and they're not listening to the show anymore because Horowitz is always negative on the cryptocurrencies. I'm like, I'm not always negative. As a matter of fact, I bought some, made some profits, got out of it and said, all right, I'm good for now. But people get so emotional about this whole thing, and it's such a
always
terrible
a bad sign, by the way.
Yeah, it's terrible because I feel really bad for the people that get sucked into all this, and they start, you know, buying all these newsletters. I mean, all these this you know James Altshuler, he had an ad everywhere, how to become a crypto millionaire, and he had this course that he charged an exorbitant amount of money for. And listen, if think about this. If you're thinking about getting into the game, you're like, oh man, I see all these people making money and they're making, you know, hundreds
that's
of thousands.
That's the way it works.
I'm going to buy, why not buy a newsletter for $8,000? That's not a, seriously, that's not a big ticket item if you think you're going to make all this money.
No, it's cheap.
Yeah.
And it's a write-off.
Yep, it's a write-off, but you won't have to, you won't be able to have any write-offs after you lose all that money.
Well, there's that.
Yeah, it just, it seems to be, I don't know, something about it. The way that it gets crazed, you have to wonder if there was any kind of a process, you know, a PR machine that was pushing this the way it was. What's the next thing? I mean, cryptocurrencies was a phenomenon that we haven't seen since, you know, Beanie Babies weren't the same thing. You know, Beanie Babies were made by one company and somehow they got, you know, the Chia Pet and the Pet Rock and those were kind of a consumer fad. Maybe sneakers. Sneakers could be next. You know, I met with...
Oh, sneakers are a huge investment opportunity. Mm-hmm. And there's an exchange and there's all kinds of action going on with sneakers.
As a matter of fact, the exchange is called StockX. You and I did not talk about this before, so this is not a setup. It's called StockX. And I happened to have the opportunity to spend some time with the founder recently. I was up at, Josh Lubin, and he's the CEO. And what they do is it's kind of like a, I don't want to call it an eBay because it's not necessarily an eBay, but it's a way they value these sneakers, you know, these never worn, you know, Michael Jordan, whatever.
First generation Air Jordans.
Right. And whatever it is, they put it on this exchange. They're priced, and supposedly this is the way to really price these things. The whole time I'm thinking, we're talking sneakers. We're talking sneakers. You know, I couldn't get it out of my head about we're talking about sneakers here. You know, this is going to be like the thing of the future, sneakers. And okay, all right, I'm going with this.
Well, you know, one of the things you run into if you are in and around or have anything to do with collectors of anything are these guys who maintain catalogs. Stamps are the same way. You go to this H.H. Scott catalog and you see what a stamp is worth. You don't know that the stamp is worth this. Dolls are a good example. There are people who maintain catalogs and all sorts of things with the prices of value of certain dolls, German dolls, French dolls. You find this with all kinds of collectibles. You find Christie's newsletters. I mean, there's this, is, but you need somebody to establish the market, like a market maker. And once they do that, sometimes it only has to be one person. And they will, if they say Air Jordan's 1978, the 80s, if they say that this particular sneaker's worth $450 or at $1,400, that's it. That's what it's worth. It's fascinating.
Well, I met with him and I spent some time. As a matter of fact, this is part of that conference I went to in New York, and I recorded all these different sessions. Sometime later this week, this one will be airing. And what was interesting, I said, well, how do you know what shoe and the condition? And, you know, one person is selling it and it's then somebody's matched to it. They buy it. They get all the shoes after the sale sent to them. They analyze it. They have their sneaker experts, I guess, their sneaker valuation experts on hand there. And they make sure there's no marks and wear and tear. And it's really actually an authentic, whatever particular sneaker it's supposed to be. And then if it is, in fact, classified as, yes, this is a sneaker. Yes, this is all original. It's authentic, blah, blah, blah. Then it's sent to the buyer after the fact. They go through this whole process after the sale, which I thought was interesting.
You got to make the market legitimate.
Right.
Which I don't think they've done with any of these coins.
They're not. Besides the fact they could be hacked.
Yeah, hacked. And what's the book value?
Right. And, you know, with the whole point of cryptocurrencies was it was supposed to be, to a degree, in the beginning. It was supposed to be private. It was supposed to be unhackable, which it is if you store it somewhere that's, you know, cold storage or on a drive, whatever. It was supposed to be, a way to transfer money, to have that. And you can't hack a sneaker unless you have, I guess, some kind of a copycat that you tried to get. And you don't know if
a sneaker has a book value.
And do you think it's possible that there is the chance to hack a sneaker? Seriously, to
what do you mean
to
make counterfeit?
But a really good counterfeit.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's the even so, and I've learned and I've learned this from Antiques Roadshow, which is there's guys that can spot the fakes, and they because there's little idiosyncrasies. Some sort of, you know, the color or the dye that was used in some part of the sneaker or the – there's always something that a – and I think that the guy you talk to probably is among many that can do that. They can spot the fakes. Art has a real problem with this.
But there are those specialists that can figure this out.
There are specialists, but, you know, the way you can get around – and I've talked to museum curators and a lot of people about this idea – and if you get a good counterfeiter, a guy can really do it. He grinds his own pigments. He finds old canvases from that era. So if you test it for age, you know, it turns out to be old. And he does everything he can to make a copy of a Monet, let's say. So I've talked to people using this particular argument. I find one of these guys, and they're all over the world, and some of them are in jail, but most of them aren't. And I get a copy. I own a Monet. Let's say I own a Monet that's worth like $20 million. And I find one of these guys and I have him make an exact copy of my Monet with my Monet as an example.
Right.
And so he makes the copy and it, you know, he ages it, does whatever he has to do. Then I take the paperwork from my Monet and attach it to the other Monet, the provenance. And I put that on the auction block with the fake Monet with my paperwork, which I now no longer have anymore because I've attached it to the fake. And I keep the original in my basement to enjoy.
And?
Says that could happen. It probably has happened numerous times.
Do you remember that story we had a few weeks ago that museum in some small town, was it France? No, it was somewhere in Europe that had 80% of their collection was fake.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess it could happen.
Yeah, no, I'm convinced that lots of the world's famous art. I mean, some things I don't, you know, I'm pretty sure they're the originals. Mona Lisa, for example. I think a lot of it's fake.
Now, I can understand hanging a Monet or a Manet or any other beautiful work of art. Well, maybe this is just a taste issue, I guess, now that I'm thinking about this, on your wall. I get it. For example, I can understand hanging a DH Unplugged T-shirt signed by us with a show number stamp on your wall. I get that. But how many sneakers are you going to have?
I saw, by the way, the guy you interviewed, I saw him on some TV show discussing this when he started up this operation. And it makes it sound as if there are people with, like a basketball player with you know, who makes $20 million a year or more. They may have a wall of sneakers just as a collection, like a wall that's actually an artwork, all these sneakers, and people come in, hey, what's that? And they look at the – I don't know. I have no idea. I don't collect sneakers.
Yep.
Although I have a pair of unused British Knights that I'm pretty sure have some value.
I collect my old sneakers. You never know. My wife's like, what are you doing with all these – you never know when you're going to have to paint or something. You don't want to use your new stuff.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, she goes to my closet, lays all the sneakers across my room, and says, "You need to get rid of two pairs." I'm like, I don't want to. Don't make me, you know. But I do it anyway. Speaking of sneakers and speaking about things that could be collectibles one day, Tesla. Elon Musk maintains his chairman role at the company, even though there was a proxy battle that was trying to separate him from the chairmanship role. He said also in a recent meeting that when he has his investors day, that the company is going to be able to meet the $5,000 per month Model 3 production quota by June.
Yeah.
Current production is about $3,500 per month right now.
Yeah. And of course, today he decided they're going to lay off 3,500 people.
I thought it was 9,000.
Oh, was it that many? He's laying off a bunch of people out of the Fremont plant.
I'm going to look this up right now. Tesla layoffs. Let's see. I thought it was 9,000. 9%. So it's 9%. 9%.
I think is about
35. 9% of the 45. Yeah, so it's about 4,200 people.
Well, 9% of 4,000 is not that many.
Well,
it has to be less than 4,000.
Well, it's 9% of 46,000, so 9%.
So then it has to be less than 4.6. So.
Okay, so it's 4,200.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of people. Now, I think I know why he's doing this.
Yeah, I think everyone's coming to the same conclusion you came to.
Well, I don't know. What's my conclusion? Because I don't think you have the
They're trying to balance the books.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm thinking. First of all, he wanted to cut the fat in terms of production. So a lot of the excessive outside contracts that they had that was working on much of the automation, the machinery coming and fixing it. He said that a lot of machinery is just not doing the job that we thought, and it's costing us a lot of money for maintenance and keeping it going and all that. A lot of outside companies we've hired to do so. So I guess he's changing that. Then he also said about a month ago that the next earnings statement, they're going to show positive cash flow. They're going to be profitable. So here's a good way to become profitable. Just lay off everybody before that.
Yeah, fire everyone.
Yeah, fire everybody. We'll have plenty.
And hire him back after the books are balanced.
I wouldn't put it past him. Yeah. And the stock continues to
defy gravity. I think they're in trouble.
Well, the stock was up 3.5% on this news, 4.5% yesterday after some article in Barron's about batteries.
Yeah, good luck.
Yep. Drivers across.
Well,
what?
I'm still thinking, you know, Tesla looks like I don't know. What am I? Why is it just? I don't get it. I don't think he can do it. And by the way, there's a Model Y they're going to do. Did you know about this?
What is this going to be?
It's like a Ford Explorer type of thing. It's
the SUV.
Yeah. It's not the clunky thing like they did. So the word is sexy.
What word is sexy?
That's what they're spelling. Because the Model S is S. The Model 3, which is the one they're trying to produce, is an E. In Hacksaw, it's backwards, but it's an E. The Model X, which is that humpback thing. So you have S-E-X and then the Model Y. Sexy.
Come on. That's weak.
Yes.
So you think
it's not weak. What else would you – why would you name these cars these letters of the alphabet that spell sexy?
I wouldn't put it past him. I mean, he has a flamethrower company, for God's sakes, and now he's looking to make a candy bar to compete against Buffett.
No, tell me this story. This I do not know.
You know the flamethrower, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, the flamethrower. That's dumb.
That's the Boring Company he has. The Boring, that's the name of his company. The Boring Company has a flamethrower. I'm not sure what happened, but there was some discussion about a moat. And how companies, let me think what he said. Warren Buffett says something about a moat. Build a moat around your company, around your product, so that it basically can't be attacked, right? So you have a product.
What does it mean? What do you mean? Attacked by whom?
By another company in terms of reproducing what you have. So if you build a moat around it, it's protected. So there was discussion about some of the companies that he owns, Mars or Hershey's or whatever it is that Buffett, you know, has in his portfolio. And Elon Musk started tweeting about it like, first of all, he said, you don't need moats. That's ridiculous. What you really want is, it's kind of like the difference between the old Microsoft and Linux, right? Linux being open source and having everybody involved in it and making it the best thing that's possible versus Microsoft having a moat around their products.
Well, by the way, Mars is notorious for having proprietary candy-making technology, which makes sense to Buffett if he's going to take this attitude about things. I don't know. There's a lot of candy bar companies that come and go, and I can't imagine how much more secret a Mars bar is than anything else. But anyway, I think Musk is right.
So let's see here. Buffett's candies. Is that his? No.
I don't know.
Buffett warns Musk not to take on the candy business. Do candy brands have moats? Not perhaps. There's a whole thing about this. Now, Elon Musk is thinking about starting a candy company to show him it can be done. It says he was trolling Warren Buffett. Elon Musk wants to fill Buffett's moat with candy.
This guy's off the rails.
Elon Musk tweets a plan for a candy company. Yep.
Well, good.
Yep.
That he's doing some with his spare time.
Yep. Candy company. Well, anything to just push, you know, to do one of these, look that way, not over here.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
I think the flamethrower was definitely that.
Yep. That was over the top. That was a jumping the shark moment. But we'll see. The stock is up about 3% today. I think it closed in at about 345. It's about 100 points higher, maybe not 90 points higher than it was on the low when there was some big problems and concerns before, about 3 weeks before the earnings call came out.
Yeah, and what changed that it would be up?
Well, what changed is the comments. The first thing was that
comments.
Yeah.
Yeah, what changed is the guy's talking more.
He's talking a lot. He does talk a lot. He's a genius. No question about that. You can't take that away from him. He's smart. I mean, he built this freaking car that's just unbelievable. We know that. Question is, can he meet this production quota by, you know, so fast?
Yeah. Well, he's trying to drill with too big an auger.
Drilling with a bigger auger. Drivers across Bosnia blocked roads on Sunday in protest against rising fuel prices. Again, back to the discussion of contagion. Warning, a knock-on increase in price for food and other goods. The one-hour blockade in the cities of Sarajevo, Banja Luka, Tuzla, and Zenica, as well as other major roles, were a problem. And they said it was done because it was social media organized.
Yeah.
And there was also another situation that happened in an emerging market, a little bit further away, in Brazil. There's some fascinating things going on in Brazil.
Yeah.
So here's a couple of things to note. I don't know if we talked about this trucker strike, but the flow of vehicles on toll roads granted to the private sector in Brazil fell 13.4% in May compared to a year earlier. And this was all because of the blockade of truck drivers throughout the country. Data compiled during the period when truckers were striking and they struck because of high fuel costs caused a lot less car movement and traffic. Last week's Brazil Central Bank tried to stabilize the real, which is their currency, but couldn't get the job done. Markets fell hard before stabilizing on Friday. I mean, there was like a 7% drop on Wednesday, Thursday. And for years, the state-owned company Petrobras, they were keeping the fuel prices low artificially. And in last July, what they tried to do is attempt to keep up with this rising cost factors, and they couldn't do it anymore. And they had a local currency, their currency that was weakening. So they decided to follow a global price mantra and allowed the company to turn a profit for the first time in years. But daily price adjustments have made it, they keep on adjusting the prices on a regular basis to keep up with what's going on. And we know oil prices have been going up. And now what's happened is a lot of these truck drivers that already set their rates, let's say a year out, can't change their rates so fast, and they're getting just cremated. So some of the things that happened from this, actually there's a chart there I gave you, and you can find all this on DH Unplugged, episode number 411, the information show. Get it? Information show.
It's cute.
Yeah. Down 20.
What am I looking at? What chart?
Brazil market.
Oh, yeah.
Down 28%. It's up a little bit. It's about the same from a couple days ago when I did the screenshot.
EWZ.
This is the Brazil ETF. Yep.
Yeah.
Between its currency dropping and between the price of the markets dropping, it's down 28% from the high that was reached back in January.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good slog.
Brazil's hilarious.
Now.
It's always up. It's always down.
Here's some of the things that are going on in Brazil. So there was concessions made. The government stepped in, we can't have this going on with the fuel prices. We can't have all this, just, you know, the daily movements and all that. But during the strike that they had, the truckers, because I think something like 64% of the goods inside of Brazil are transported by truckers versus trains or boats or planes or cars or Uber. So even as some concessions were made during the strike, several McDonald's restaurants ran out of hamburger buns. And this is even worse. Chickens ran out of feed and started eating each other.
Those chickens.
Those nasty chickens.
Yay.
No food?
I'll take Bill over there.
I'll take Buffalo Bill Wing over there. Fuel ran out at the airports of the nation's capital, where politicians scrambled to get on the limited available flights, of course. International commodity markets were stunned because they're a leading supplier and exporter of sugar and coffee and meat and soybeans, and they could no longer guarantee shipments because the planes weren't getting out. So, big problem for Brazil. In a recession at this point. Now, and to ensure that we have no problems here, what we ask you to do is, if you find any kind of value in what we're doing here, do me a favor, do us a favor, put it down on paper, or better yet, put it down on PayPal. You can donate. There's a little button on the website, which a lot of people feel, like I said, they come back and they write me and they feel very energized after they push that button and donate whatever you can. You could make a weekly donation or one-time donation. As a matter of fact, one of the things we have, this is a special show. It's the 411. John, you know this is the only episode 411 that we'll have?
Yeah, it's true.
So we are a limited time.
It took us 411 weeks, so a long time to get to 411.
Mm-hmm. So now what you could do is you can go over there. If you donate $411, which is the number of this show, we will actually sign and put the show number and send you one of our limited edition DH Unplugged t-shirts.
Yep.
A lot of people have done it and they really like it, but you can only do this a few times because 411 is gone. As a matter of fact, as time goes on, we're at 411 and 10 cents already.
Yeah.
as the show goes on.
Yeah.
So you can go over to DH Unplugged and donate, and that's awesome. I think that would be
next
really great.
Next Tuesday, it's a dollar more.
Yep, it is. Now it's time for Fed Limericks.
Ah.
I need to get a drink here.
Yeah, I think you probably do need it.
Because we have a lot.
We have a lot of them. We have four.
And people, the thing is that people are writing in. They're like, all right, what does John think of this one? You know, all right, I got a D last time. I'm working on it. So the first one comes from Chris Beggio. And he's
submitted before, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. They're trying to perfect their craft. And he writes,
you could do worse than perfecting a limerick writing. I think
that is something, listen, one day when he's gone and they stand up there for the eulogy and they say, one of the things that he really loved was writing those limericks. Really, people loved reading him. Because by now he has probably a book full. All right, here we go. Starting with the first one. The Fed is the domain of Powell, who caused the markets to howl. With wrenches the tool and pundits to fool, rising inflation irritates his bowel.
Well, I'll tell you, the structure of this one is pretty. It's like looks good on paper.
And by the way, before you give your number here, your letter, the chat room should be given a letter grade here. So let me see what you say, and then we'll see what he says.
I like the thing until he gets to his last line, and it's like, and you read it wrong, by the way. It's who causes the markets to howl? You said cause. With interest at the tool. Interest the tool and pundits to fool. I think bowel, because it's bowels. It's really a plural word. It makes it like he's pushed his luck.
Oh.
And so I'm going to have to give him a B minus.
B minus. It's still for you. That's like if we were
because I think he nailed. I mean, the structures. Look at the words where they end. It's almost like a nice square block. It's pretty nicely done.
That's if we curve that, it's like an A plus the way you grade.
You could have done it this way. The Fed is the domain of Powell's.
Oh, that's true.
It's his. It's Powell's domain.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which causes the market to howl. You can leave the S off howl, and then you could add the S to bowel, and you'd nail it.
Aha. There you go. All right. The next one comes from me.
Ah.
Oh, God. What is that?
It doesn't mean anything.
For he is a jolly good fellow, hoping interest rates will start to mellow. But as bonds take a hit, the Fed takes a shit, and their undies are soaked through in yellow.
I'll give you an A for that.
Really? Ah, there we go.
Because it's slightly dirty. which is the limericks are notorious for being dirty. And it's funny. It got me to laugh.
All right. There you go. Yeah. I'm going to frame that one.
It's your best one. I'll say this. It's your best one ever.
Awesome.
Even though the structure falls apart, it's still the best one ever.
Ah, great. This one's from Chris McCoy. It is what I've always been fearing. My savings just keep disappearing. Not a bug, but a feature, the size of this creature. My anger burns red and searing.
Huh.
Did I not read that right? It's what I have always been fearing. My savings just keep disappearing. Not a bug, but a feature. The size of this creature. My anger burns red and searing.
Yeah, I think it gets dissociated by the time he gets to the fifth line. Because he's talking, you know, he's doing some sort of surreal analysis, and then he talks about his own anger. I'm going to have to drop. I mean, I think it's an attempt, a good attempt, but I can't go higher than a C+.
All right. The final one is from Simon Davies, who is a regular at this point.
Yes.
The U.S. Federal Reserve takes credit it doesn't deserve. With quantitative easing and rate hike teasing, they're like a drunk who's refusing to swerve.
You know, I think this one had everything going for it until he got to the last line. Because the last line is actually kind of a non sequitur of some sort. Because drunks, well, why would you? It doesn't make sense. But up to that last line, if he could redo the last line and make it a little shorter, because it overruns a little bit.
He could get rid of the first words. Get rid of the first word.
Yes. That would be a good idea. That would shorten it. But it won't change the nature of it. I think this could be resubmitted with a better last line. And so I'm going to give it a what do you call when you're at school and they give you a no grade? A withdrawal. It's a withdrawal.
Withdrawal. What is that?
It's a W.
A W.
I'm not going to grade this limerick.
All right. Okay. All right. Withdrawal. Always something new. Always something. All right. We have, of course, the American Tower close to the pin that is ongoing right now. You have a few more days to get your price guess in. That is the company. Actually, it's an interesting time because, did we get to this? We didn't get to this. We have to go backwards. We have to go back. Just in. Judge rules in favor of AT&T allowing it to acquire Time Warner.
Yeah. Why?
This is very much against what it seems the Department of Justice and President Donald Trump wanted. And we're probably going to see some further hoo-ha about this. And but with that, we saw that as soon as that notice came out after hours today, there were some other stocks that were getting hit. Some hot stocks that were moving up, but Express Scripts and Cigna, they were starting to move. Sprint, T-Mobile, because of their potential for merger, it was concerned about there would be some, Department
News for Sprint and T-Mobile.
Right. So with that,
what are you going to do? You can't stop them now because, you know, you've just opened the door.
Right. And now with that in mind, there was some concern for American Tower if the Sprint and T-Mobile deal went through, that there was going to be less of a need for additional towers because now you have one less company out there.
Interest, yes. This is going to affect the direction of the stock.
Yep. So you have a few more days to get your price quote in. For those of you that got your quote in, you only get one shot. So a lot of people are smart, though. They wait a little bit longer to the last day. They set an alarm or something like that.
It's like people use eBay a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right. What was the other one? Starbucks, Howard Schultz stepping down. Some talk about him entering politics. We'll see. A couple of things. Oh, we have to take a moment. I'm sure you cover this on No Agenda. We have to take a moment to say goodbye to Anthony Bourdain. Very, very terrible situation there.
Yeah, it's a shame.
I was very, very disturbed. I guess people probably were very disturbed, felt close to Kate Spade. But Anthony Bourdain, I traveled a lot of places that he's been to because he's been there.
Yeah. He's a good ambassador to travel.
Yep. There's some things that came out of this that were really interesting that I found that it seems that when people take their life, the people that are in the public eye, there's some research that suggests it can be sort of a catalyst for more people to do the same.
Yeah, that's probably true. There's a yeah.
So there was a study by some researchers at the Columbia University that said there was 18,690 suicides in the 4 months after the death of Robin Williams in 2014, which is suggested an excess of 1,841 cases, 10% more. And there was some other things that came out from the University of La Verne in California that said one of the tragedies of suicide is that in addition to the loss of life is always a possible back to contagion effect. In the past, when Robin Williams' death found this higher thing. So last week, what was interesting is the call volume on the suicide hotline jumped 25%.
Yes, which means it seems to me that a lot of people, more people than ever, are thinking of killing themselves.
Just awful. One last story before we get to the stocks, or two more things. You remember those California, of course you do, the Northern California wildfires that killed 18 people and burned through 174,000 acres back in October. And there's a question about, you know, how did this start? What's happening? Well, it seems that they found that PG&E caused a lot of this. Their power lines and other equipment, there was some things going on there.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some legal action with that.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to affect the company that much.
May not. But there was some concern about that. It did affect them initially when that happened, of course. So what is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine this week?
That's a good question, again. So put me back into the people taking bets on whether I can remember my own column. I did write it early, so that I have some excuse for not remembering what it was. Oh, yeah. So I went back and I reanalyzed Yahoo because there was some news about them. They're going to kill Yahoo Messenger completely. And so I reanalyzed the fact that this company was a plague. And so far as they saw all these things they started and then stopped. And I drew some interesting conclusions about it, and which is that Yahoo eventually will go away because of no other reason. Verizon bought them.
You've always had a thing about the Yahoo companies.
Yeah, they get these little companies that are thriving, they buy them and then shutter them. You know, they can't seem to manage anything but besides their own main business. And I've also mentioned in this column, which nobody wants to talk about. I think the company is and this is Marissa Meyer's purchase of Tumblr. Tumblr probably owns or has on its servers half of the world's pornography.
Yeah.
And it seems like a liability to me. So
why is that a liability when that is?
I think there's a lot of illegal. I think there's kiddie porn, bestiality. Oh. I think there's a lot of illegal porn, and it's illegal to hold that stuff on your servers.
That's interesting. Period. That's interesting.
And I've never liked that purchase of Tumblr. I think Tumblr was always risky, and I think it's. I mean, they've tried to clean up Tumblr every so often. They, you know, purge certain things, but. Nah, I don't think they've done a good job.
So. All right, let's get on to the weekly stock picks game that we have here. It's a game that we play. We come up with ideas and thoughts and come up with maybe some things that we think will do well due to certain circumstances. It's only a game. It's not an offer to buy any security. Not a recommendation at all. If for whatever reason you decide to choose any of these for any reason, buy them, sell them, short them. Do it with professional financial advice. We are not liable because we are not telling you to do so. If, in fact, John C. Dvorak, myself, we own this, more horrors come to clients, we'll duly note that. And you can follow all this over on DH Unplugged. If you haven't done it, it's a really cool page that has all this information flowing in real time when markets are open to show what's in, what's out. We usually have some stops that we have, about 10% trailing stop, or we tell you what's going on if there's something different. So our list is kind of thinning a little bit again.
We have to beef it up.
Take the list. Your freaking Facebook is screaming.
Yeah, Facebook's cooking. It's up 26%. It's the high number on this whole list.
I think
list.
You bottom ticked that thing. You hit that on the bottom.
I think I came close.
Amazing.
I'll put it up there with my long forgotten Netflix short. Alliance MMA is, this is a problematic thing, I have to say. Tesla, it was the short. That's your short, I believe.
Yeah, bumped.
It got bumped. That's too bad. Drexion's also got kicked.
That's your Russia?
Yeah, that's the Russia triple. The Russia single is still going.
Yeah, because that has a 10% stop on it. So the other one, you know, it's three times.
Right, it's going to be wiggling around more. Mm-hmm. Biotechni is up. That was a lark. It was mine. Like, you got to get more picks. This whole chart looks like it's like 90% mine.
Now, there's been times that it's been opposite.
Yeah, I guess you're right. The Deutsche Bank short, which was up, won at 10% up, and it's down now, and so it's got kicked.
It's not down. It's still, you made 10% on it.
Yeah, I made 10%. It was good. Eagle Point Credit Company, that's down. It's dead money, actually. Generic Holdings, Hurricane Season, that's your pick and sexy pop back up. You also shorted Macy's, mm-hmm. which I think was smart, and I think it's still a good short, but it's dead money right now. Morningstar, I just jumped on because of the chart, and I'm up 5%. I mean, just look at the chart.
Yeah, up. There was, I think, the Morningstar conferences this week too, which is one of those things that.
Oh yeah, that would goose it.
Yep.
And then you've got, this is new, isn't it?
Yep. This is the
Brazil.
Yeah, I go with the triples for this game. So like I
pick, you always do that
because you know it's a game. First of all, second of all, because you get more bang for the buck, and otherwise it's not real money right now. Not that I recently did, in fact, buy this myself for a swing trade, made some nice money with that big move down and it came back. But this is the triple long Brazil ETF.
That should be fun to watch. Curiously, as a coincidence, I have a Brazilian pick.
You really?
Yeah, Vale.
Oh, Vale. That's interesting. That's yeah. Vale, V-A-L-E?
Yeah, V-A-L-E, which I call Vale. It's a mining company. They're heavy into cobalt. They got a lot of mm-hmm. – it just seems like a very smartly run company. They just did a deal with a number of other miners to move with cobalt out of a huge mine up in Canada. And they got holdings everywhere. And I just – you know, I was just saying, well, you know, this is like an interesting pick to me. Right. So I'm doing that based on cobalt. It's a cobalt pick.
Cobalt play.
Now I do have a insider's trading thing because how can I not? It's a closed end fund that this guy keeps buying and buying and buying and buying. He doesn't really have that much, but he's buying it. He's a director. He was a CEO for a while. He became the executive chairman. And I think they kicked him upstairs. Now he's a director. It's GSVC. It's a borderline penny stock.
GSVC?
Yeah.
Okay.
GSVC. It is.
Control V. GSV Capital.
Yeah, GSV Capital.
Okay.
It's down to $6.75. It fluctuates.
18.
It's actually in the long haul. It looks like the Bollinger Bands are coming together if we want to get technical, and it should break out.
All right, there we go. Insiders.
So we'll see.
All right, until next week, I bid you adieu.
And same to you.
All right, see you then.
See you then.
Bye. You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.